In any case, as a result of the reopening of this contact, Miletus and Samos really did become important intellectual and economic centers. Both cities, for instance, had important shrines. Miletus controlled the great oracle of Apollo at Didyma, a shrine just outside the main city where oracles were delivered, and it was almost as important as Delphi, and in the Roman Empire was the third largest shrine in the entire Mediterranean world. Samos controlled an ancient fertility cult, a cult to the goddess Hera, or anyway, a goddess identified with Hera, and her shrine was also one of the early international or pan-Hellenic, that is, all Greek shrines in the Aegean world, and attracted pilgrims and patrons from Asia Minor. So this background is extremely important to explain why the East Greeks took the lead in defining so much of that early Hellenic civilization, which might sound a bit curious to us, but a good deal of Greek civilization in its formative stage was really formed on the shores of Asia Minor rather than in the Greek homeland. And Greek artists show themselves particularly adept, these East Greek artists, in adapting the various arts of the Near East. And this took various forms. For instance, furniture and metalwork. Very, very strong influence of Urartian and Phrygian work. If you go to the Museum of Anatolian Civilizations today in Ankara, which is in the heart of Asia Minor and Turkey, you will see remarkable workmanship of objects, tripods, bowls, all sorts of vessels. And you have to remember that pottery was really just a cheap man's substitute for a metal vessel. And you would look at them and you think they were Greek in inspiration, but they really are Anatolian. They were really made by the native peoples of Anatolia, in some instances 100, 200 years earlier than their Greek successors. And many of these objects appeared in the Greek world not only as trade goods, but also as votive offerings. King Midas of Gordian, the Lydian kings of Sardis, all sent these as gifts to Delphi, to Didyma, to Samos, revering the Greek gods as somehow equivalents to their own gods, or certainly respecting the international reputation of these shrines. And so the great shrines in East Greece, in many instances, became a veritable museums and a way for artists to learn different techniques. Styles. Textiles was probably one of the main commodities that appeared, and again, leaves very little in the record, but a great deal of the artistic influences, depictions of myths in the Near East. Oh, the cycle of Gilgamesh, the story of the generation of gods, which you find in Hittite texts. All of these in later versions appeared in textiles and ceramics, in furniture decoration, as well as in tales, and were therefore transferred to the Greek world. Our best record on this is the pottery. And as I mentioned earlier, pottery can be quite deceptive. You have to remember that Greek vase painting, as it's called, or in many instances etching, was really a minor craft. It wasn't a high art. And many students go away with the notion that vase painting is Greek painting, and it isn't. It would be the equivalent of using Wedgwood in place of Rembrandt. I mean, there's enormous difference in the achievement here and what the market demands and what the artist is trying to achieve. And so you have to keep that in mind. Nonetheless, the pottery record is very clear. When the Bronze Age civilization collapsed, that marvelous naturalistic painting you saw on Minoan and Mycenaean ware disappears. The pottery is very crude. It's regional in style. It is not very impressive. And only in the 8th century BC do you begin to get geometric designs, these regimented bands that appear. And some scholars have claimed this is a Greek mine already at work. And these things tend to get a little overinterpreted in the period of the Greek Dark Age. We have no written records, so you're trying to deduce from pottery wider implications of society. But what it is clear is shortly after 700 BC, as the Greeks renew contact with the civilizations of Asia Minor and farther east, that they pick up new styles of decoration. It's called in textbooks very often orientalizing, a rather unfortunate term. It simply means any Eastern influence, primarily Asia Minor and Syria, that has been taken over and adapted to Greek vase painting. And really, it's quite marvelous because the Greeks take mythological figures sometimes prototypes from Neo-Hittite art, such as sphinxes, and they turn them into fantastic animals. And I get the sense that most Greek vase painters were probably comedians at heart, because you get these marvelously silly scenes. You have lions stretched out and they're eating each other's tail as they decorate the band of the pot, or the Sphinx has a silly smile on its face, the so-called archaic smile. And there's indications that they deliberately seem to misunderstand what the context of this art form was in the Anatolian and simply adapted it to their own work.